Well, guys, welcome to our first podcast for the month of March of 2013. This is going to be our final week in this series, Short People in Deep Water. This morning, we're going to look at a topic that I'm reasonably certain everyone can identify with. It's the topic of isolation. What happens when the deep water that I'm in is the deep water of feeling alone? There's obviously times where we want to get alone, where we want to be by ourselves, but then there's those other times where we just feel like we're literally drowning in our own isolation, can't seem to break out of it. And it seems that one of a few things is common at times like that. Either I believe that no one could possibly understand me, and so I don't open up, or another common refrain is that people don't reach out to me, people don't make connection with me. And so either we assume the worst about other people, that they won't understand us, or we assume that people are just intentionally indifferent to us, maybe caught up in their own lives, maybe a little bit selfish. So I think every one of us understands in some way what it feels like to be alone. And obviously, in addition to the perception of isolation, there are those very real circumstances in life that do tend to isolate us. There's certain things that I simply can't share with you. If you're going through a difficult circumstance in life, I can empathize with you. I can listen to you. If you're going through a tough divorce or if you're going through a tough illness, I can be with you. But I simply cannot live that experience for you. And so there are certain very real ways in which we are alone. But today, I hope that we're going to look at a few ways in which we can break through those walls of isolation. So let's take a look. Incidentally, I should probably tell you that this is being recorded apart from our study group. This morning we met at the diner, and it was a place not really conducive to recording, and we started in a somewhat awkward way, so it really wasn't a good time to record, a good place to record. Felt that it would be better to do this at a separate time. So some of the insights that I'm sharing with you right now are ones that were shared by our men for the morning. And one of the first comments that was offered after I posed the question, have you ever felt alone, was yes, and it seems that what starts out small tends to get bigger, get worse. That I may not even at first realize that I'm isolated, but as I begin to sense that I'm alone and I'm not connected to other people, that maybe I've pulled back from that connection, it becomes progressively more difficult then to reach out. It's as if we're sinking further or deeper into that aloneness, and the deeper we sink, the harder it becomes for us to get out. So I don't know if that's ever been your experience or not. Another one of those things that prevents us, I suspect, from reaching out is a sense of pride. We hope that other people are going to notice us and reach out to us. Sometimes it's our own feelings of inadequacy that separate us. I'd find it easier to connect with you. I'd find it easier to open up with you if I didn't feel, honestly, so insufficient, even in my own eyes, that I just find a hard time even measuring up to my own standards of who I should be. And the last thing I want to do is come clean with you about that. And we forget that that's a common experience. When we're going through embarrassing or awkward times, we can forget that other people go through those same types of experiences. Some of the men shared about situations where sin tends to separate us from other people, that we think that we're in some sin, caught in some sin alone, and no one else could possibly understand us, when of course that's not true. But just as likely are those times when we simply don't feel adequate. The men around us seem to be doing better financially. The men around us seem to live in nicer places. They may seem to drive nicer cars, and just their lives seem to work, or at the very least on the outside they seem to work. They look attractive, and ours, well, we live inside ourselves, and so we see all of the unattractiveness of our own lives, and we only see the facade of other people's lives, and so we can tend to conclude that other people's lives are obviously working so much better than ours, and we feel, well, sometimes, honestly, awkward and embarrassed by that. We want our lives to work well. Who doesn't understand or identify with the idea that I've spent years working to make my life successful and have the things in my life work well, and at the end of 5 or 6 or 7 years of trying very hard, I look at myself in the mirror and I realize, boy, I haven't achieved what I wanted to. I feel, in my own mind, I feel like I'm a failure. And it seems like all of the feedback that I'm getting from those around me is doing nothing but affirming that inner sensation that I'm a failure. And that causes us to pull back in, to retreat from others. It's one thing in the proper community setting, in the right community, where everyone in that particular community understands a particular struggle. So, for instance, it's one thing among a community of recovering addicts to share with someone that you're struggling with the addiction yet. Other people will get that, and you almost have a sense that they'll very clearly get that and empathize with you. They won't judge you, they won't condemn you. You don't even feel silently condemned in their presence because you just know that they know. But sometimes in our everyday interactions with those in church community or even with some of our close friends, it's not that they condemn us. It's not that they would ever intentionally set out to make themselves look better than we. But we somehow draw the conclusion that they've got it more together than we are, and we feel a certain sense of internal shame. This can especially be challenging in a guy's life where maybe he's had a good 10-year run in a career, and then all of a sudden he gets laid off, and he can't get work. And then he finally does get work, but it's not work that he would like to do. It's work that's well below what he was accustomed to making. And that cut in pay after a long time of being out of work just gnaws at him and nags at him, and he feels somehow on the inside as if he doesn't have what it takes. And that can be really difficult to share with other people, and we feel as if we are drowning in those circumstances. And that's a kind of aloneness in one way or another that I think many men can identify with. So certainly we have a responsibility to ourselves and to our community to reach out. When I sense that I'm alone, when I sense that I'm isolated, and I mean again in an undesirable way, not the good kind of alone time that we need, but when I sense that I am depriving myself of community, that I'm intentionally retreating from community, that I feel inadequate or ashamed or somehow just unworthy of communicating with my peer group, it becomes my responsibility to reach out. But here's an equally important question. What is the responsibility of community? And when I pose that question to the group members today, most men felt that it was really the individual's responsibility. I think all of us, when we first hear this, when we first consider this, acknowledge that it should be the responsibility of the isolated individual to reach out. We get that. Let me share with you a metaphor. It's actually not really a metaphor, but a real-life circumstance in which my isolation and my aloneness is something that I can't fix. Maybe you've seen or heard or read about a circumstance where someone was buried in an avalanche. I did a little bit of quick research in advance of sharing this idea with you, just to confirm some of the facts and figures. And here, honestly, is the way that it works. When a human being is buried in an avalanche of snow, they're powerless to free themselves unless they're only superficially buried. As the snow settles in and packs in around them, it literally entombs them to the point that they are sealed off in the snow. They're so tightly bound in the snow that they can't begin to move to free themselves. And to compound the difficulty, the little bit of air that they have, they take in quickly and they exhale. And what happens as they exhale is that that air starts to melt the snow around them and literally freeze that snow and trap them in a sealed cocoon so that soon they run out of air. In other words, the only hope for a person who is trapped in an avalanche is for someone in his peer group, in his community, the ski team that he was with, the group of outdoor people or whatever, someone in that team to release him. Let's use that as a metaphor for what happens when we are alone. Sometimes it might be the responsibility of other members of our community to help to release us from the tomb of our own isolation. Well, how do we do that? Let's take a look. So to understand the idea a little bit more completely, I'd like you to think about some of the, at length, we'll call it, conversations that you've had with people in the last month. Or maybe in the past 6 months. And here's the question I have for you. Have you ever spent an hour or an hour and a half or maybe even 2 hours with someone? Or maybe in a small group setting? And at the end of all that time, you thought to yourself, my word, what a waste of my time. I mean, have you ever really just come away from there thinking, why did I give an hour and a half of my life or 2 hours of my life to this conversation that was really essentially about nothing of value? We talked about trivial things, and we talked about trivial things in great detail. We laughed a little, we joked a little, but at the end of an hour and a half's time, I still have the same feeling of emptiness or aloneness inside of me. I feel as if no one understands the real me any better than they did before. And I think sometimes that's the helpless, hopeless feeling of being in community. When we try to be in the presence of other people, and yet everything about us that is the real us that lives inside of us, the soulish part of us, everything about that remains unrevealed, and we feel under or completely misunderstood. Well, I think there's a couple of things that will help us beyond that. First, we need to be proactive in our community experiences. Each of us needs to be able to talk openly about what's going on the inside. I think we need to talk not from the perspective of trying to, what I'll call, brag about or promote our brand, but rather simply to talk about the real human experience that we're having. Have you ever been in the presence of a person who's always trying to one-up you? They've had a better vacation. They've just come back from a great experience. They're just a little bit smarter. Things are just always going well in their career. Have you ever been in the presence of that kind of person? And it is just nauseating, isn't it? And at the same time, and here's what will happen sometimes, at the same time as this person is bragging up their own personal brand, you're feeling trapped in a situation where nothing seems to be going well in your own life. So here's Joe, everything going well in his life, or at least he portrays that everything is going well in his life, and he promotes himself as all of that and more. And here I am, and I'm sitting and listening to this. And the more Joe brags on himself, the less likely I am to open up and say, well, you know, it certainly isn't going well with me. I'm feeling inadequate. I'm feeling incomplete. I can't seem to make things in my life work, and I'm not sure what to do about it. And I'm becoming very discouraged in that. See, I don't feel open to share that as long as Joe is promoting his own brand. Frankly, I wish I were a little bit more like Joe. But at that moment, Joe is the last person whom I'd like to share that situation with. Well, so in our communities, if we want openness to be the environment, if we want isolation to be vanquished, then it's essential that we not in our community gatherings promote ourselves, but rather we be honest in our conversations. You know, there's a phrase we use in leadership. It says that one of the key personal internal dialogues that a leader has to have with himself is to constantly be saying, you go first. meaning that a leader is the person who sets the example. A leader is the one who says, if I expect other people in the group to do something, I'm going to have to do it first. I'm going to have to set the example. I'm going to have to set the tone for the whole group. Well, each of us who is going to be intentional and proactive in small group community, each of us is going to have to act with a leader-like quality of saying, I will go first. I'll talk about the inadequacies in my own life. I'll talk about the difficulties in my own life. I'll be the one that goes first. And not only that, just as important, I'll be quick to ask other people about how they're really doing. You know, I had a great conversation with a man the other night at a local diner. And he started to tell me a little bit about what he did. And by nature, he is a salesperson and a great communicator. And he did a little diagram on the back of a piece of paper to describe the track of what he does for a living and how he gets from point A to point B to point C in the progress of making a sale. And his illustration prompted a really insightful discussion, by the end of which I could appreciate the difficulty not only of his job, but the complexity of what he has to carry with him all the time. I was very glad for that conversation, because even though he intended it probably initially just to describe the workflow of his type of work, it really gave me some insights into what he has to deal with on a daily basis, and the struggles that he has to cope with, the challenges of remembering everything that he has to remember in the course of his day-to-day work. And I really gained a little bit more respect for what he does and who he is, and I also came to appreciate some of his unique internal qualities that make him who he is. It was a great conversation, and it was made possible because I was very focused on listening to him and trying to learn everything I could from the conversation. So another one of the isolation breakers, I believe, men, is you and I need to take a real, sincere, genuine interest in the people that we're going to relate with. Honestly, I have to care about you. I have to find your life somewhat interesting. I have to work at finding your life interesting. And I know this is not easy. Some people's lives don't, on the surface, look particularly appealing or interesting. And honestly, some men are not great communicators. I know guys, frankly, who could make mountain exploration sound like a boring thing to do. I know men who could make a great day at a beach in the Bahamas sound like an uneventful day. I get that. They're not great communicators. But it's our responsibility when we are in community to look below the surface, even to look beyond the baggage of another man's inability to communicate particularly well at first, and to help him with that. To look for the interesting components of his conversation, and to draw him out there, to ask great questions, to really become fully engaged in that man's life. And so I think that is one of the cures for how we as community ensure that isolation doesn't take place. In other words, we rescue each other, coming back to the avalanche analogy, we rescue each other from being trapped alive in our own aloneness by becoming interested in each other's lives, becoming available for each other. And when we see someone who is starting to isolate, we seek them out. And we don't focus necessarily on their isolation. The last thing that I want when I'm sick, the last thing that I want when I'm not up to par is for someone every 5 minutes saying, well, how are you feeling? I don't need you to remind me that I'm feeling bad at any given moment by asking me the question every 5 minutes, how are you feeling? I already feel bad. If anything changes, I'll let you know. Until it changes, just assume that I don't feel well. So in those isolation-breaking conversations that we have in community, we don't necessarily dwell on the negative that's going on in the man's life at first. We simply engage the man in conversation. Maybe ask about things that might be going well in the man's life. Maybe start there. with simple reminders of the fact that even though this or that in an individual's life is not going well, there may be some other things that are going well. I think there's another important component to ensuring that each of us is free from the plague of isolation, that we're not entombed and suffocating in our own isolation. Let me ask you a question. If tomorrow you were removed from your circle of friends, how long would it be before they noticed that you were no longer part of their lives? Now, I don't mean how long before they'd notice that the work that you do wasn't getting done. But how long before they noticed an incompleteness in their inner life because of what you provided for them? Now, if you'll stop to think about that question for just a few moments, you might even want to pause this right now and think about that. How long would it be before you were missed? How long would it be before there was an emptiness that started to show up in the lives of your friends because of what you weren't putting into them? You know, that's a real measure of who we are as men. More than our income level, more than the house we have, more than a lot of the other things that we do. How long would it be before those whom we say we are close to would really say, "Boy, I wish Jim or Joe or John were here. He's the one guy that would have something to say, to speak into my life. Some word of hope, some word of encouragement. Boy, I feel empty. I feel alone when he's not here." And just think about that. Do you have that kind of a guy? A guy whom you say, "This guy always knows what to say. Or he knows not to say something. He just knows to listen." And are you that guy? Are you that guy that is putting into the empty spaces of another man? Are you that guy that cares so deeply about the inner man of another man? Paul, when he's writing to the Corinthians, in the book that we call 2 Corinthians, he talks about how our real, our eternal selves is our inner selves. It's the part of the human being that we don't see. And yet he says, that's the part that lasts. That's the part that matters. It's not what I look like. It's not what I wear. It's not how healthy I am. What it really is what's going on in my intellectual and my emotional self on the inside. That part of me. That's the part of me, the soulish part of me that is going to live on. And that, he says, is the part that, because it lives on, that's the part that needs to be renewed. That's the part that needs to be protected and preserved. Deep friendships come about because we choose to make investments in the inner man of other men. Deep friendships are cemented because other men choose to make investments in our inner man. And finally, as one of the guys in our group this morning reminded us, it's not enough to have friends around you who are willing to make investments into you. In other words, to give into your life. But each of us needs to be willing to receive as well. And that's an area that some of us, I think, honestly struggle with. I know for a fact, I can say without question, I struggle in this area. I don't have a problem giving. And that's a pride issue. Because giving implies that I have something. That I have something that you don't. That I have more of something than you do. That in some way, you have pocket of inadequacy or a pocket of emptiness in your life, and I don't have that pocket. As a matter of fact, not only don't I have that pocket of emptiness, but I have surplus. I have so much of this that I can give some of it to you. That's exactly how much of it I have. And I will still be complete after I've given something to you. So giving sometimes is the easier element of the equation in interactive community. But boy, sometimes it's hard to receive. And yet, it takes a community of giving and receiving people, each person acknowledging that in certain ways I have something to give, but just as much, I have other areas where I desperately need to receive. And so I believe that is perhaps the final key to unlocking ourselves from our tombs of isolation. I must be willing to give, but I must also be willing and open to receive. And I think we've all been to this place as givers. And I say it that I really believe that many men, even for the wrong reasons, are better givers than they are receivers. It's not that we shouldn't give. We encourage people to give all the time. But I think we give out of a sense of pride, out of a sense of completeness, out of a sense of, let me tell you what I know that you don't, and I can enrich your life. It's sort of a pride thing, sometimes. And yet, until our communities are made up of people who can receive just as well as they can give, they won't function in a whole way. See, when Paul talks about, in the body of Christ, we each have gifts to give. We've each been given gifts by Christ for the purpose of ministering to each other. If we're all a giving community simultaneously, who's left to receive? We can't all be needy, certainly. Someone has to be on the giving end of that continuum. But we can't all be so filled that we refuse to acknowledge that we have needs and we need to be receivers as well. So this week, as you go through your week, and in the coming weeks, as you maybe find yourself at times trapped in either real or perceived isolation, let me encourage you to do the following. Make your conversations real and authentic. Don't waste hours of your time talking about things that really aren't that important. As you talk about yourself, talk not only about your experiences, but talk also about the challenges of those experiences. Yes, in fact, even though we may not be good at this, talk about how those experiences make you feel. What made you angry in a certain situation? What made you feel inadequate or incomplete in a certain situation? Because I believe those are great door openers that allow other people to do the same thing. Learn to take an interest, a genuine, authentic interest in the lives of other people and the stories that they tell. And ask probing questions that will direct a person toward your level of interest in the conversation. You know, sometimes people are just sharing a story with you, waiting for you to show interest in something that they share, and they'll gladly redirect the conversation to talk about the part of the conversation that you are most interested in, the element of the conversation that you're most interested in. Don't be afraid to ask good probing questions. Finally, be willing to receive. In every community, be willing to receive. Give thanks for those who have helped you. Make sure that they appreciate the help that you've offered. Just as importantly, be open and willing to receive from other people. It demonstrates a level of humility. Even in receiving, I think someone has to be the leader and say, I will go first in receiving. Not only will I go first in giving, not only will I go first in sharing, but I will also be willing to be the one who admits, in this area I'm empty and I need a filling. And I'm open for you to do that filling. Guys, I hope you found something helpful in what we've talked about this morning. Hope you can put some of this to work in your relationships. And look forward to being with you next week when we start the new series, Spiritual Coaching.